read, O Lord, you have searched me and know me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thoughts afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. At this time, we're going to hear from Doug Twaddell. He's going to be speaking on God is familiar with us. Are we that familiar with him? It's a question we all need to consider. And Doug, we appreciate hearing from you.
God is acquainted with us. Does anybody here doubt that? We could go to all kinds of passages in the Bible. We could look at examples from our own lives. We could look at examples of the lives of people we know. We could think about David. How early did David believe that God knew him? When I was in my mother's womb, you knew me. You already knew what I was going to be like. You already knew who I was going to be. When Samuel went to find the son of Jesse that was to be king, who knew better who was going to be the best king from among the children of the sons of Jesse, God or Samuel? God did. Because Samuel thought they all looked fine to him. But God said, no, there's one in particular. God knows us very, very well. So really the question becomes, how well do we know God? How well are we acquainted with him? And how do we know whether we know him or not? So what I'd like to do first is I'd like to go to some examples of some people that God knew pretty well, but that didn't, at least for at least a moment of time maybe, didn't really understand God as well as they thought they did. We're going to turn to Exodus chapter 3 first. We're going to talk about Moses a little bit. God knew Moses pretty well. God watched over Moses when he was born. The very time frame he was born in was a time when Moses should have been dead before he ever really had much of a chance to live. And yet God watched over him and protected him. God watched over him while he was raised in the palace of Pharaoh, a place where he could have been so inundated and so succumbed by the idols that they worshipped and the various gods in their hierarchy. But yet God watched out for him, made sure that he had his mother who would raise him to know the one true and living God. God knew that it was not time when Moses decided it was. When he killed that Egyptian slave master, God said, no, it's not time. You're not ready. My people are not ready. And it's the wrong Pharaoh. It's not right, the right time. And God knew that. And God watched over him while he was herding sheep. He found a way to put him together with a man that was a God-fearer, that had a wife that was going to be a daughter that was going to be a good wife for him, found a way to watch over him even in another land, in another place, for years. Watched over him while he learned how to lead by being a shepherd. And when it finally comes time that God says, now it's time. In Exodus chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, Moses' first thought on him leading the children of Israel out of Egypt is, why me? Why me? Verse 11, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Why me? Can't you find anybody else? Over in chapter 4, verse 13, he actually says that. Oh, my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send. Pick anybody, God. I'm not the one. But God knew Moses. God knew Moses better than Moses knew Moses. And God knew how to use Moses and how to make Moses who he needed Moses to be. To the point, this is sort of a sideline, but in verse 14, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well. God becomes angry with Moses. How often does God become angry with us? Because we think we know better than God. We think we understand ourselves better than God understands us. There's a task that needs to be done, and we're not willing to do it because we don't think we're capable, but God knows we can. How often does God get angry with us? God knew Moses, but at this moment in his life, at this point, Moses does not know God. He knows who he is, but he doesn't understand him, and he doesn't know him the way that God knows Moses. Let's jump forward in time to Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14. Peter. Peter had been around Jesus for several years at this point. He had seen, who knows, we don't even know how many because we're told there's some that are not written down. Miracles that Jesus performed, teachings that Jesus did, predictions that Jesus made. How many of those things had Peter seen with his own eyes, experienced firsthand? And yet in Mark chapter 14, starting with verse 26, when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to him, all of you this night will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. And after I've been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter said to him, even if all are made to stumble, yet I will not be. How many times had Peter seen Jesus say something was going to happen and it came true? Even just recently. He had told them, you go into the city ahead of me, a colt's going to be waiting for you, here's the room you're going to use. Everything was planned out. And Jesus knew exactly how it was going to work. And yet Peter says, not me. So Jesus emphasizes it. Verse 30, Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you that today, even this night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. But he spoke more vehemently, if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all said likewise. You're wrong, Lord. Jesus knew Peter pretty well. He knew exactly what was going to take place. But Peter did not know God very well at that moment. He lost sight of who this person was that he was speaking to. He did not understand Jesus. One of my favorite passages on this idea is in Luke chapter 24. And we won't read the whole thing, but starting in verse 13, this is after Jesus has resurrected from the dead, and there's two men that are headed on a road to Emmaus. And they're walking along and talking about all the things they'd seen and heard. They were believers, at least to a certain extent. And I am going to start reading in verse 19. After Jesus has come to them, and he says, they're talking about the things that are going on. And Jesus says to them in verse 19, what things? So they said to him, listen to the things they know. The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. Yes, and certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early astonished us. When they did not find his body, they came saying that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. Look how much they knew. They knew the whole story. They knew about Jesus. They knew he was a mighty prophet in word and in deed. They knew that he had to have been a teacher sent from God. They knew he had been killed. And they knew there was a story going around that he'd been resurrected. But they did not know who was standing in front of them. They did not recognize him. Even after, in verse 26 or 25 and 26 and 27, as he begins to expound to them why the things they just told him were supposed to come true, he explains it all to them. They still don't recognize him. Now, I know that there probably was some sort of miraculous veil put over their head. I don't know how that worked exactly, but it was made so they couldn't physically recognize him, but they should have been able to know the information that was being given. And they missed it. We hoped that he would be the one. They missed it. They knew a lot about Jesus, but they did not truly know him as the Messiah like they should have. I want to take you to a passage in 1 Corinthians. That's going to be our last example. But I want us to look at a passage in 1 Corinthians, and I want you to keep those three examples and any others you can think of in mind. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Verse 21. For since, in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believed. The world through wisdom cannot know God. You ever stop and think about that? No matter how much we just sit around and think about it, no matter how much we look off into the stars, no matter how much we investigate science, we cannot know God simply by those things. It is impossible. And it doesn't take us very long in examining the scriptures to understand what happens when man goes off on his own and tries to understand God by his own wisdom. God here says it takes the foolishness of the message. Something simple. How great of a mind does it take to understand the vastness of the universe? Or the complexity of an atom? Or the relationship of how all things in science and all those laws that we have in science, how they all relate? Or the way that the human body functions and how it can heal itself and how we can exist and think and communicate the way we are now. But yet the message to know God is so simple compared to all that. What happens when man tries to find God through his own wisdom? Well, let's go to Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4 and starting with verse 8. But then indeed, when you did not know God, you served those which by nature are not gods. See, that's one thing that happens when man tries to find God on his own. God never turns out, the God that man has in his mind never turns out to be anything like the true and living God. We get images of animals or images of beings that are mythological and have never walked the face of this earth. We get images in our mind or in our artwork of creatures that are some of both, maybe. We come up with all kinds of things. If we don't want to come up with something new, maybe we worship the actual sun or the moon itself. See, that's what happens when man tries to figure out what God is on his own. Because who God is so much beyond what we can think or what we can understand from our own experience that we can't possibly come up with anything that's like him. And look how many societies and how many people since time began have tried to do this and have never been successful. We cannot figure out on our own who God is or what he may look like or what his nature is. It's impossible. Look at verse 9. But now, after you have known God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you turn again to the weak and beggarly elements to which you desire again to be in bondage? It's possible for us to know with confidence who God is, and something happens and we slip back into thinking we know what God is and creating something completely different. Look at what the children of Israel did. They watched the plagues happen. They watched it. And they watched some of them affect the Egyptians, but not the Israelites. And they saw the blood on the door and how God passed over their families and didn't affect them. They watched how the Red Seas parted. All night they stood there and watched. I couldn't have slept when that was going on. They stood and watched that happen, then walked through on dry ground, turned around and watched God swallow up the armies of the Egyptians. And they stood on the far bank and sang praises to God, the Creator, the Holy One, the Defender of His people. You've thrown our enemies into the sea. They knew who God was. They saw Him shake the mountain. And yet there at the foot of the mountain, what did they do? They built a little golden calf. And Aaron announced, "This is your God who brought you out of Egypt." We can do the same thing. We can know who God is, be very confident. And if we're not careful, we can slip back into the old ways. We can slip back into a framework that is not good in His sight and begin seeing Him or worshiping Him in a way He doesn't like. We can begin viewing Him with an eye that is skewed by our own human wisdom. It's possible for us to return again to our false gods. Now, I don't know many people in the United States anyway that would go out and build a calf necessarily, a golden calf, and worship it. But how many of us can fall back into the ways of worshiping at the feet of our traditions, or worshiping at the feet of our job, or worshiping at the feet of our children or our families? How many of us can fall back and lose sight of who the one true God really is? 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Well, we'll start with verse 3. "For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God, that no one should take advantage of and defraud his brother in this manner, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also forewarned you and testified. Now, this is talking specifically about sexual immorality. But I like what he says there in the middle when he says in verse 5, not in passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. When we don't know God, we can be led astray and be guided by our own passions. And not just sexual lust. This is any kind of lust. This could be a lust for power, or a lust for control, or a lust for food, or a lust for pleasure of any kind. This could be anything. If we do not know God, if we're not guided by the one true God, then we will end up being guided by our own desires. What is it that James tells us sin comes from? It starts with our own desires. It starts there. We have to be very cautious that we can learn to know God so that we can tell the difference when it's something that we should be doing because God thinks we should be doing it, or something we want to do because we think we should be doing it. And there's often a difference. Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1, I'll read verse 16. This is speaking of false teachers. They profess to know God, but in works they deny him, being abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work. They profess to know God. They say they know God. They talk a good talk. They look the part. But they don't really know him. And the way that they show that they don't know him is by their works. What they do denies who the one true God is. Don't we see this all around the religious world today? People who profess to know God, but the things they do in his name are not godly, are not righteous, are not true according to the scriptures. Everything from worshiping him perhaps in a manner that he does not accept, to maybe committing violent acts in his name. They say they know God, but their works tell a different story. 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. How is it that I can have a concept of if I am understanding who God is, if I know God? Well, one of the first things that happens is I have love in my heart. I have love for him. I have love for my brethren. I have love for the people around me. I have genuine concern. And it's not playing a role. It's not playing a part. It's not putting up a good front. It's genuine. It's deep-rooted. It's unstoppable. He who does not love does not know God. Paul said something else in Philippians chapter 3. And I'm going to turn there real quick. Philippians chapter 3, and And I'm going to start reading in verse 7. Paul here is warning us and anyone else who reads this against becoming confident in the flesh, against putting our trust in things that we can see and perceive and know, and things that we can touch and handle, and power that we can gain from the people around us, and trusting in the things that those who do not know God tend to trust in. He's warning us against that. And he's using his own example. So I'm going to start in verse 7. He says, "But what things were gained to me, these I have counted loss for Christ. Yet indeed I also count all things loss for the excellence of the knowledge of Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having my own righteousness, which is from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness which is from God by faith, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, if by any means I may attain to the resurrection from the dead." All that Paul had at his disposal, he says, I count it all loss so that I can know Christ. That was his one goal. He wanted to know Christ, and he wanted to know the power of his resurrection. He wanted to understand God. Not just know who he was, but to really, truly, deeply know him. There's an interesting account that happens in Genesis, and I know you're familiar with it, but there's one part of it that I think reverberates clear through the rest of Scripture that God continually uses as an example to us, to help us understand what happened and why it was happening and what was going on. This is in Genesis chapter 2. This is Abraham being asked to offer Isaac. And he takes Isaac and the servants and the wood and everything else he needs except for an animal for the sacrifice, because he's offering his son. And he heads to the mountain to offer the sacrifice. They get there, and he and Isaac go up the mountain. I know you know this story. They go up the mountain, and he puts the wood on the altar. He binds his son. He puts his son on the altar, and he is ready to slay him. It says he has the knife in his hand. And look what happens in verse 12. Well, in verse 11, the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." So he said, "Here am I." And he said, the angel of the Lord said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." This is what the point of this exercise was. God was seeing if Abraham really, truly knew who God was. And there was only one test. There was only one way that God could find that out for sure. And that was to see if it would be reflected in what he did. To see if it would be reflected in the actions that Abraham took. If there was complete and total trust and confidence in the Lord. Or if it wavered. If he doubted. If he second-guessed. God wanted to see. And when it became apparent that Abraham was absolutely going to go through with this, God stopped him. Because the sacrifice of Isaac was not the goal. The sacrifice of Isaac was to see if Abraham knew God. And when he was willing to go through with it, God said, "Now I know. Now I know. Because I've seen it." You know, it's no different for us. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. "Now by this we know that we know him, if we keep his commandments." God just lays it right there on the line. How do I know God? How do I know if I know God? How do the people around me know if I know God? By my actions. If I keep His commandments. Look at verse 4. He who says, I know Him, and does not keep His commandments, is a liar, and the truth of God is not in him. Moses thought he knew God. His actions said differently. Peter thought he knew God. His actions said differently. We have to be careful. Our actions tell others and tell God whether we know Him. He knows us. He's known us since before we were born. The question becomes, how well do we know Him? Because one day we're going to stand in front of Him and we're going to find out. We're going to find out how well that relationship is built, how strong it is. There won't be any question whether God knows me. There will be no doubt whatsoever. He knows my innermost thoughts. He knows the intent of my heart, way beneath what I do. He knows why I do it. The only question will be, will I know Him? Because if I know Him, then I will hear, enter in, my good and faithful servant. If I have not proven that I know Him, I won't hear that. I'll hear, depart from me, I never knew you. How well do we know God?